Hey, this is Nicholas Brendan. I play Xander on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And you're listening to Potential Cast.
This is episode 16 of season 5 of The Body. Buffy, Dawn, and their friends find themselves dealing with the painful events surrounding Joyce's sudden and unexpected death.
What?
What?
Stephanie?
I'm Kimberly.
This is Gabby.
I'm Robin.
And Illyrio is...
silent.
I'm busy getting stuff ready. You guys go ahead. As long as we're recording. Are we recording?
I was waiting for you to do the Netflix summary stuff, which says, as the group helps Buffy and Dawn deal with the aftermath of their mother's tragedy, Buffy begins imagining alternate realities.
It's
what?
Like,
what?
Did
what?
Watch the what? Episode? That's crazy.
Netflix. Shame on me.
Oh, Netflix. Now, it's funny because, like, this episode... I listened to the commentary by Joss last night, and this is actually one you guys can listen to. Like, yeah. He doesn't refer to any future events at all.
Good stuff.
It's really good.
I'm going to wait till I'm done, thank you.
Yay. Yeah, a lot of thought went into this episode. Like, it's amazing that, you know, what the ideas behind the episode, like he wanted to show he wanted to capture the extreme physicality and boredom of the first moments of loss.
He did a really good job.
He really did. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are going to get into this, but I noticed that they use a lot of different camera work in this episode than they've ever, I think, used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no cutting because he wants you to be in the moment, and he doesn't give you a break.
There were two or three shots where it was just a steady cam for a long time, and we're following Buffy in one and the Doctor in another scene. Mm-hmm. And the entire episode, there's no score.
Mm-mm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, oh my goodness, this is real. Like, yep. As soon as like I realized that, I'm like, okay, this is happening. Brace myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't, oh, she was okay all along. It was, hey, let's explore the most devastating thing that could possibly happen to our main character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's so powerless against it.
Yep.
The camera work, I mean, there's definite, like, a lot of different things about the camera work that you can observe, and he talks about in the commentary. One is just the fact that he's... Well, he does say about the long shots that he's like, you'll have to forgive me. I was watching Magnolia a lot when I was doing this, and I love that movie. So that kind of got into this. But he wanted to show that it was all, you know, connected. There was no escape from this.
Uh-huh.
This is
mm-hmm.
And if you notice, especially during the first scene, or the first, you know, bunch of scenes that, you know, with Buffy discovering and everything, you can't get away from it. It stays on her. There's no shots that take you out of the action. It's all really her, mm-hmm. you know, you're on her reactions. You're on her kind of point of view when it comes to Joyce, when it comes to the paramedics.
You know, I figured I'd say this at some point. I didn't know if I was going to end up saying it now or towards the end, but I had a very hard time watching this episode. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get through the first 15 minutes of it without stopping it because it bothered me so much, and I can't believe I'm doing this just talking about it, but I had to stop and put it away and come back to it weeks later because it was too real. And it's in my head, I'm like, it's just a TV show, because that's what I've been saying all along. It's ridiculous. But now we have something that is completely, like Steph had alluded to before, something not supernatural, something very natural that happens to people and is completely out of everyone's control and completely shocking to walk in on something like that. And it really, really bothered me. Again, I had to put it away for weeks and I didn't even know if I was going to get back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got to say, as someone who was 18 when his dad died, and it was kind of all of a sudden, not all of a sudden the way Joyce died, where Buffy came home and she was dead. But there was this element, you know, of coming home and, you know, the house is all messed up because an ambulance had to come through and they couldn't get the gurney through and the door had to be taken off the hinges and all this stuff. And then you go to the hospital and, you know, you're expecting a lot in your mind, which you don't expect as a human being you can't communicate to anymore. Uh-huh. And all of the scenes in the waiting room for me were really, really, really amazing, because there's this kind of numbness that happens when something like this happens to you or to someone you love more specifically. And there's no way of anticipating what that's like. You can watch as many episodes of a TV show where someone dies, or as many movies, or hear about it as much as you possibly could as a human being, but to actually experience it is a very difficult thing. And the way this was written and shot was fantastic. The most realistic depiction I could have ever anticipated. And I must say that I'm glad that I have watched this, and I'm glad I'm watching it while podcasting about it, because this is by far one of the greatest things I have ever seen put together. Mm-hmm. By far one of the most riveting things I've ever seen put together. I don't ever want to watch it again, though. I watched it once and that's enough for me. Can't do it anymore. Won't be able to.
Yeah. No. I can't, and I know with me too. Earlier this year, I walked in on I walked into a place where someone had been dead for a while. So luckily, I did not see anything, and I didn't have to go through what Buffy went through, actually seeing her mother. And that's another thing too. All I could think of was like, oh my God, my mother, and what if I walk in and see them? But all I could think of was walking into that particular place where that person, where that body was, and smelling the smells all over again. Mm. And I would never, and I know I can, if it wasn't for having somebody watch it along with me last night, I couldn't have watched it, the whole thing, and I will never watch it again. I can't.
Yeah. The great thing about this episode is that, you know, like Illyrio was referring to before, was with the, you know, you see people die on television all the time, and you even see, you know, close family members and people dealing with it. But what Joss was trying to get at here was, you know, the reality of it, the fact that, you know, sometimes there's no catharsis, there's no happy, like, okay, well, we learned something from this. It's just death. It's just here. It's real. It's in your face. And it sucks. It really does.
And the scene where Xander gets a parking ticket, where there is a vampire in the morgue that Buffy has to fight and kill, it's to show that even though you're in grief, it doesn't matter. Life goes on, and nobody cares. You know, the world does not care that you're in grief. It's still going to go on.
Right. I'm not sure if you guys were like me, but the scene where they take the camera and they pull it out the window to see the ticket being put on the car.
Yeah.
That was I remember that was a moment where I got a chance to breathe.
Oh my God.
Because I was
holding
my breath so much, and I was just like, I think I watched the episode kind of with blinders on because I was like, okay, this is happening. It was very matter of fact. And I was like, just processing all the information. And I was like, okay, okay, okay. And then the whole scene with Anya totally broke me.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
yeah.
But it was a tough watch, you know,
very.
But I felt, I don't know. It was tough to watch. And I think at the beginning, there may have been things that I missed, but I don't think I missed anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was very, I honestly was watching it going, I didn't know that the show had this in it, because we've been watching this and Angel at the same yeah. time. And how many times have I said, Angel is such a more grown-up show. Buffy's yeah. so high school. It's so ridiculous. And even putting this episode right behind the most ridiculous episode that we've seen this season, I'm just like, okay, fine. I get it. Like, I get it. I'm an idiot. Fine. So, but this episode was, it was tough. And I don't even think, like we can even rate it to say if it was good or mm-hmm. not, because it's such a difficult subject matter to deal with. It was, I think it was very well done. I've never, fortunately, had to deal with that. So I don't even know what I can compare it to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, if you want to talk about personal experience, I mean, I saw this a few months before, you know, my father, like, passed away from cancer, like, real quickly. Like, all of a sudden it hit him. Mm-hmm. We found out he had cancer. A few months later, he's gone. And, you know, I hate to be, like, such, like, a super fan and saying, well, Buffy helped me get through it. But it is a real thing. It really yeah, did yeah. actually help and showed that, you know, wow, this is actually kind of, this is familiar now. This is, I see that this is actually something everybody has to deal with.
Mm-hmm. You're not alone.
Right, right. Actually, you know, Joss's mother died the same way. This is
really
very personal.
Whoa.
And this might be why, you know, Kim, you're like, I can't believe I was so dumb about this show, you know, or whatever. But you know, Joss, this isn't like a regular episode. The Joss, this is very personal.
Yeah, and they've even hinted at it many, many times in this episode. Just when you think things are going good, they're going to pull the rug out from under you. And how many times have they done that? And yet again, it has happened. Why are we surprised that, you know, well, the subject matter, yes. But are we shocked that Buffy just had this complete revelation and all of a sudden her world is completely turned upside down?
Yeah, like in the scene where Buffy goes to Dawn's school to tell Dawn, okay, before Buffy gets there, Dawn is crying in the bathroom because of another student and because teenage girls are the worst thing ever. And then she has this conversation with a boy and it's going really well. He kind of likes her, you can tell, and that's what he says in the commentary, that he builds up the character so it will crush you that much more.
Uh-huh.
I, at that point when all that was going on, it was the first time ever I completely forgot that Dawn
was Palmolive.
Wasn't a
was
real
Dawn.
Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, that she was the key. She was, you know, she was Pinocchio, basically. Yeah. And that was the, like, 19th time that I broke down.
Yeah, Gabby,
into a fit. It was awful. Oh, my God, to see her. And then, too, after years of this point, making fun of how bad the acting is, how amazing mm-hmm. the acting was. Mm-hmm. That I bought every single second of this episode. I bought every... You know, like when every awkward moment, because there were lots of awkward moments, and yeah. I bought all of the devastation and that whole, you know, there's always when something traumatic goes on where you literally go in 1 second from being a sick, quivering mess to just going on autopilot with no emotion whatsoever, just being matter of fact, and then going back to being nothing but a ball of ridiculous emotions. It was, oh God, that scene was awful. Oh my God, that, oh, she broke down the hallway. It was so sad.
I have some trivia about that. you said it's the first time you've, you know, really cared about Dawn. Michelle Trachtenberg actually says herself that this is the first time she thinks that the audience can finally connect with her
character. Well, they got me right.
and you know, Josh said in the commentary that they filmed that scene out in the hallway between the two of them and did, like, you know, the back and forth shots and went through the entire conversation. And, you know, and then they had a shot from inside the classroom through the glass. And then, you know, when they were putting it together, Joss was just like, we don't need to hear the conversation. Mm-hmm. We know what's going on by watching through the glass. And it's even more hard.
Yeah, watching that scene, it took me back to when I was in elementary school, and I remember I was sitting in the hallway, and a teacher pulled out a student from a class that wasn't my class, and obviously gave the girl bad news, and she broke down crying and fell to the ground. And it was so eerie to watch that, because I'm like, oh my goodness, this is happening.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also right beside, again, Dawn, teenage girl. What is she obsessed with? This guy that she thinks is the hottest thing right beside her. And then her sister comes in again to ruin it. Like, what are you doing? And then gives her the worst possible news that you can get.
Oh, Joss, like, the fact that you see Dawn laughing, it's all like, haha, happy, you know, flirty with boy kind of thing. And, like, over her shoulder, you see Buffy come into focus as she's coming in the classroom. And then just...
It's like,
amazing. Yeah, exactly.
No.
I'm going to request that we get as much of us talking about this done as possible in the next 35 minutes. So I'll just play voicemails and things like that at the end, if that's okay with you guys, once we're done.
Okay.
And we'll definitely read your comments in the Facebook, guys. Is that cool, Valerio?
Yeah, not a problem. Yeah, just stuff that would take time that we can do at the end. I know we usually comment over them and stuff, but I think just because of time constraints right now, we'll be doing that later. Again, it is my fault. I have a prior engagement, but I can't be late. So I'd like to talk about the entire Discovery and paramedic until Giles gets there. For the paramedics to leave her alone, shocked.
I thought, isn't this not protocol?
The hell out of me. Now, I don't know if it's protocol or not. I understand that they couldn't do anything. I understand that the guy had to go and save someone who was potentially still savable.
Okay. Well, from what I understand, in different states, you know, there are different laws.
There are.
Like in California, you can have two paramedics to declare somebody dead. I think in my state you have to have a doctor to declare somebody dead.
Yeah, that's how it is in my state too. You need a doctor to declare somebody dead. But if somebody is found dead, and it is not in a medical setting, then the cavalry practically needs to be called in they have to rule out foul play. Yeah. So literally it can be an all day process with different branches coming in and assessing the situation. It's ridiculous before they can even take the body out and do what they have to do.
So as soon as a paramedic is called in, like, there needs to be somebody there on the premises that is not.
In this state of Rhode Island, Maryland, yes.
If it was Dawn that found the body and the paramedics left the body with Dawn, that would be.
I was going to get sued real fast.
What are they doing? But Buffy's an adult.
Yeah. Well, poor Buffy. She's so strong and so weak all at the same time. It really is difficult.
That whole, I'm glad you brought us back to it, because that whole beginning is amazing, like between Sarah Michelle Gellar and her acting and the Steadicam and by the way, she had to do that whole thing 7 times.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The puking too.
Well, I think part of the reason using the Steadicam was for that reason, because it probably would have been so draining if they had to take it from this angle, from that angle, and they wouldn't have gotten the emotion that you could have gotten in one take.
Yeah, well, it's just like they again, they didn't want you to escape from it. Yeah, you're staying with Buffy, and
like he talked about showing the phone. Like, the phone was the first cut away from from the situation, and it and he wanted to keep it, and just like how she goes and she looks outside and you can hear the noises from the street, but they're not going to show you the street because they're not going to give you a break.
You get a little bit of relief with the wind chimes when she's puking, the little air coming through and wind chiming, and then she's back up again.
And Buffy does that thing.
But yeah, the close-up on the phone, Joss said that's actually, that's the moment when Buffy realizes that her mother's actually dead. Like, she's actually like, whoa, this actually, because he said he took it from his own experience. You fixate on something meaningless, and then all of a sudden you come back to reality again, and you're like, whoa, wait a second. She's gone, you know?
And then, you know, when they show, like, a fantasy of her thinking that the paramedics are going to save her, and then they're in the hospital, and she's like, oh, thank you, Buffy, for finding me. He said, that's not a cruel joke. That's showing you that everybody that goes through this situation fantasizes about how what could I have done differently to
Did you guys think
outcome.
For a split second when she was breathing that, oh, my God, oh, thank you, thank you?
I did.
Yeah.
I did when I first saw this. And that's the reason why, like, a lot of people in the spoiler group were like, guys, don't say that Joyce is dead at the end of I Was Made to Love You when you guys record that, because, you know, because you get that scene where it's like, oh my gosh, you know, she's come back or whatever.
Like, I remember watching for a split second, I was like, oh, and then not even half a second later when the paramedic was saying, it's a miracle. I'm like, oh, here we go. It's in Buffy's head.
Oh, the whole Christmas thing. So the whole Christmas thing. So was that one of, you know, how like they say when you die, memories flash before your eyes. Was that a Joyce last memory that we saw?
I think it was Buffy.
There's a technical reason for that.
Okay.
Joss wanted to give us one last time of everybody being happy together with Joyce. He said one thing he regrets is that Joyce leaves the room and they continue to talk. But the main reason was he did not want to have a bunch of credits going through Sarah Michelle Gellar's big scene.
Mm-hmm.
That scene is actually as long as those credits are going on.
Oh, wow.
So it's just kind of like normal Buffy kind of stuff going on, and then all of a sudden we're back to this, and there's no escape from it. There's no credits distracting you know?
Did you guys also think when Buffy says, I have to make a call, she calls Giles.
Right.
And I think she said she's here.
She's in the house.
She's in the house?
She's at the house.
Did you guys think it was Glory?
I think so, because she looked outside at first and she saw something. Yeah. So I guess maybe her intuition was telling her, but really it was just she couldn't put words to what was going on.
Because I thought, oh my God, could Glory be this bad?
Frankly, well, I was hoping. And frankly, it helps because it makes Giles' entrance that much sadder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That he's expecting there to be some kind of battle, and there's Joyce.
Yeah.
And then soon after, Buffy calls her mom the body.
That was
and
jarring.
Catches herself and immediately regrets it. That was, anyway, not supposed to
touch the body.
Move the body.
Yeah, because when she was on the phone, the operator said, she's like, it's cold. She's like, is the body cold? She's like, no, my mom.
No, my mom.
Yeah.
Should I warm her up? Tara in this episode is relatable and, to not be too harsh, useful, and provides some serenity and a bit of a pillar for Buffy, who can look at someone who's been through something like this and realize, please tell me, how do I make it through this?
This whole episode I was watching like I was walking on eggshells as well, and when... Mm-hmm. Willow left with Xander and Anya, I thought, this is going to be the most awkward conversation. Like, is this the first, like, Willow, I mean, Tara Buffy conversation? Like, and I'm just like, what is she going to say? Like, what can she say? They're just going to sit and stare at each other. And I was like, oh, that's, mm-hmm. they had a nice moment there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of Tara, did you guys realize this is the first time we've seen Tara and Willow lip lock?
Yeah, I wrote that down. Oh, yeah,
I did notice.
Was that the first time it happened on TV?
Like, I don't think so, no.
I don't think so.
Because I know it was the first time for the show.
Yeah.
For sure.
I remember last night when I watched it I found it unsettling, and not because it was women kissing, please, but because it seemed awkward to me. It was like, I get that Tara was trying to comfort her, and that's how she was doing it, but I'm projecting again an episode, yeah. But to me, that would bother me. Like, hey, back off. I don't need that right now. But I realized while watching that whole exchange, too, once it started with the two of them in the room, I realized how irrational, like Willow, I personally can be about stuff like that. Like, that Willow, the way she was reacting, I'm like, holy shit, that is totally how I react to completely out of the blue traumatic situations like that. And yeah. I, for the first time in a long time, I really, really, really connected with, I mean, there were little bits of every single character as they were going through their own, you know, their own, you know, trying to realization of the situation. But Willow especially, I'm like, oh my God, that's me. That is me right there with the sweater, and she liked me in that sweater, and where is this thing? And I want you to hold me, but don't. It's like, I'm crazy like that. Oh, my God.
And that's what people do. Like, I remember when my granddad died, my dad was kind of an obsessive personality himself. He fixated on the autopsy. He was, like, obsessed about the autopsy. And it's just for him, I know it was just, that's what he's used to dealing with, is something technical like that to keep his emotions in check, because he's not able to control. Because, like, when I was growing up, I was not allowed to go to funerals because my dad thought that I was like he was, which I am not. I'm able to handle my emotions. He's afraid of his emotions. And so, therefore, he didn't want me going to funerals.
Mm-hmm.
So, when he lost his dad, if he could focus on the autopsy, then he didn't have to deal with his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, can we talk about that scene in the dorm room? Because I thought it was friggin' phenomenal.
Yes.
It was so, it was layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of, like, everything happening at once. And it was very well done. Mm-hmm. And I think also at the same time, okay, I even said it before in this episode, I think this was an episode for Joss to give a big middle finger to the people that have bashed his show or even said things like, oh, it's so juvenile, it's so this, it's so that. And how many times have I said, I hate the way that they're portraying Anya. She's just a character that blurts things out. So ridiculous. She's there for a laugh. She's there for an easy way to get in and out of a scene. And in this scene, when she breaks down, it was just so heartbreaking. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
I couldn't handle it. That's what I was like, oh, my God.
I held it together to this moment, yeah. Yeah.
I held it together until Anya went on her little rant. And then you have to think back, she just doesn't get it because she's never had to deal with things like that before. Mm. And it was like, it was so heartbreaking. It was so heartbreaking for anybody that watches it objectively or has, you know, comments to say about a show. If that scene didn't break you, then you really have a heart of stone. Because because there are things that I don't cry at. There are things that I can watch. People are bawling beside me, and I'm chuckling, you know? That scene totally killed me.
Put the horns back on, will you?
That scene killed me. It did. It was so honest, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And every character did that whole thing. Because, like, Tara, whatever, mm-hmm. even though she wasn't that close to Joyce, what was her number one thing in this scene? She had to be there for Willow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Xander punching through the wall, you know? And then the two of them having their little back and forth about, oh, Xander, you're so dumb. But they understood it. And the thing that got me the most is that when Anya went to sit on the chair, then she pulls out the blue sweater they've been looking for. Yeah, yeah. And then I was like, it's right there! You know? But
It's kind of a genius scene because, you know, Willow is flailing about trying to, you just feeling complete, everybody feels completely helpless. And then all of a sudden, Xander punches his fist through the wall and everybody is like, ah, okay, I can fix this. I can help him with this.
Yeah. Xander, not to sound sexist, seemed like such a, like every guy that I've been around, like was such a guy about it. Like, oh, well, I'll take the ticket. Oh, I'm going to punch the wall. Oh, it's the doctor's fault. They're trying to, they were like, oh my God, could there be more testosterone coming from him right now?
I think in a way that shows the relationship, why it works so well between Anya and Xander, because he's always had to explain things to her. Oh, and in this situation, there really is no explanation for an aneurysm. Mm-mm. So he has to, I think in a way he was trying to not just comfort himself, but, you know, comfort Anya to tell her, well, maybe this is what happened.
Yeah.
It was such a good scene and it was very subtle and they all had their little bit to play and they didn't overplay it. And I thought it was
not at all
very, very, very well done.
Yeah, I mean, even the way they were standing there, you know, like the way that they were holding themselves, staying very close to themselves, and it was all, you know, their awkward silences, because it's a lot to process, and everybody's processing it in their own ways.
Yeah, and I wondered how they were going to play the scene as well, because, again, Anya was asking questions that weren't inappropriate, but at the same time, it was like, ugh, why do we have to deal with her when we're dealing with such a bigger thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
But then when she broke down, you're like, oh, okay. And even Willow, she was just like, what's your deal? Like, she wanted to be like, just shut up, you know? And I thought it was so well done.
Joss said that Allison Hannigan actually made everybody cry with every single take that they did of her looking around for clothes and stuff. And Joss actually went through the same thing with a black tie. He couldn't find the perfect black tie before going to a wake or something like that. So it was kind of centered around that. And the Anya thing, you know, it's not like it surprised him how much it affected everybody, but the Willow stuff definitely affected them all more, you know, while they were shooting than the Anya stuff.
That woman can cry and get puffy.
Oh, she actually did get very puffy in the scene. Another bit of trivia. I'm so annoying with this. Allison Hannigan was allergic to the plaster dust from the scene where Xander punches his hand through the wall. Her right eye and face swelled up during the filming of that scene, and she had to be taken to the hospital.
Oh my God!
Lovely.
Well, then it was very convincing. It's what people. What?
Damn you, drywall! They should have gone for the walls at Angel's Irish home. Call back.
But that neurotic stuff. That stuff. I wasn't surprised that Willow was looking for something to wear.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying she was neurotic because she's Jewish?
Oh, no. Are you profiling me?
Where did that come from?
Yeah, we were playing nice and everything. And
no, please.
I use humor to deflect away from serious emotion.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
She's using his swastika to protect us all.
I know plenty of
interestingly
other
enough
that are neurotic.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the original swastika, which was oriented the other way, was a symbol for protection in Indian culture.
In Indian culture.
Dot, not feather. Miss America!
We just talked to us about this about this on IntrodX. That's at IntrodX.com.
Oh my god.
No, are you of the body, by the way?
Sorry. I am. Festival. Yeah. Okay. We have 18 minutes before I have to leave. So,
I suggested, Illyrio, you let it record, and then can Christine come down and press stop in half an hour?
You know what? If you guys want to keep going without me, you can totally do that, and I can just stop it later.
Yeah.
No big deal. Yeah, we'll do that. Cool.
We can get good. Done.
So we'll just carry on, and I'll just give my, whatever, if we're doing quotes and ratings and all that stuff. The hospital scenes were what I anticipated. A waiting room, trying to talk to Buffy, not knowing what to say, everyone feeling sad, Buffy not sure what to do, and then Dawn goes and seeks out her mom's body.
Mm-hmm.
I've never personally experienced seeking out the body. I mean, I, you know, went to the room where my dad actually died because that's where my mother was. And I saw the dead body. I think it was very numb and just didn't really look at it. And it's interesting how Dawn, who is, you know, if we're to believe the character is a teenager, she goes out and seeks it out. It was like she didn't believe it was true.
Uh-huh.
She had to see it for herself.
Exactly.
And no one was going to stop her. Apparently not even a vampire.
I was kind of surprised that they would have a vampire in this episode, and there had to be some vampire slaying. You know, I understand, you know, why, but I was just like, these guys have gone through enough. Do they need this now? Like, really? And then when Dawn got out of the bathroom and then she started walking toward the morgue, I was just like, really, Dawn? Really?
You're going to mess up in this episode, too.
I'm like, really? It's all about you?
God damn it, Dawn!
Well, the way I think about it is teenage girls or teenagers are just, what's the word? Oh, crud. I just lost the word. Impulsive. They're impulsive. You don't know what they're going to do.
They're self-involved.
I gotta say, when my father passed away, I wanted to see the body.
And Joss talks about how in the beginning Buffy had her time to deal with, you know, the body. Dawn has to deal with the body.
Yes.
I don't know. I guess a lot of people just wait for the funeral.
When I saw the vampire sit up, for a split second, I thought it was Joyce. And I was like, oh, yay! But then I was like, no.
Joyce is a vampire without a soul.
I was like, no, they wouldn't do that. Buffy's but anyways.
Mom. Yeah, the vampire at the... Again, I get it because, you know, your life, as you know, it still goes on. But at the same time, I felt this, it felt strange, and I don't know, disrespectful?
Yeah. And that's
it's weird. I can't.
It's an intrusion.
Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. Let's deal with this and then go on to the slaying of the demons and the whatever. Yeah. Let's get over this whole thing. It was very, it was strange and off-putting to me. Mm-hmm. And
It's on one hand the whole life goes on concept that we're talking about throughout this episode, but Joss also said a lot of it. A lot of this episode, there were things he wanted to focus on, the minutiae of shocking, unlovely physicality, and those are things like Joyce's rib cracking. And of course, you know, a naked vampire. body standing there in front of this poor teenage girl. Things like Dawn doesn't say I have to go to the bathroom. She says I have to go pee. You know, things like that. I don't know.
I even thought the back and forth between Buffy and Dawn in the waiting room, I guess, was, you know, because Buffy thinks she's mad at her.
Yeah.
You know, and she's like, yeah, I know where the washroom is. Like, you know, the way that she would answer. I thought that was very realistic, and I enjoyed that.
Both Sarah Michelle Gellar and Michelle Trachtenberg were raised by single mothers, so this was very close to them, too. Trivia, trivia, trivia.
It's weird. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else, but at some point I started, as a viewer, I started, again, because there's all just all this stuff where it really strikes a chord. Like, parts of me were starting to think, like, okay, now what's going to happen now? Like, what's going to happen with the house? Now, what's going to happen to Dawn? Is Buffy gone? And I started thinking about the practicalities of what happens next. It was weird. It took me, and all that to me started to happen when they were in when they were in the hospital, because to me that's when, like, okay, now shit's getting real. We gotta figure out what the next step is, and it was weird. That's all. I'm like, okay, now is she gonna be legal guardian? Are they gonna have to go to court? Like, what's going on?
How are they gonna pay the bills?
Like, I don't know. Is she gonna have to leave school? Is this what's going on?
These are all good questions.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, and I also thought, oh great, is now Buffy's dad? Is he going to be in the picture?
But you know, the first person, you know, if a parent dies, the first person a child usually calls is the other parent. Buffy called Giles.
She needed her dad to be there.
A little foreshadowing there, Robin.
No, not at all. I'm saying it's the
Giles is going to adopt them.
I did not say that.
Giles adopts him.
That'd be awesome.
Well, Giles
adopts the college.
Well, it makes sense because her dad has been completely non-existent, and Giles has been the father figure for this whole series.
Well, that could be another thing that we're going to have to deal with now, you know?
Just to remind you, Dawn has been completely non-existent as well before the season.
Deadbeat Dawn.
But I feel bad for Palm Olive right now. I felt even bad using the P word.
Potential cast?
Like, if it were such a somber episode, maybe I'd make fun of the fact that the naked vampire didn't have makeup on his legs, but he had a lot of it on his chest and his face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying.
It was very, very...
And very hairy.
The makeup on his body was very, very makeup-y.
Awesome. I have to get ready to go soon.
Yeah.
Are we going to be doing quotes today? What do we think?
I don't have one. I didn't take one.
I don't either.
No one? Well, I'd like to read my favorite part of the episode if I could.
Go ahead.
Okay. Please.
But I don't understand. I don't understand how this all happens, how we go through this. I mean, I knew her, and then she's there, just a body, and I don't understand why she can't just get back in it and not be dead anymore. It's stupid. It's mortal and stupid. And Xander's crying and not talking, and I was having fruit punch, and I thought, well, Joyce will never have any more fruit punch, ever, and she'll never have eggs, or yawn, or brush her hair, not ever, and no one will explain to me why. And for me, the best part about that was the or have eggs, or yawn, or brush her hair. Yeah. You know?
I got one.
You know, I think that was very, very well done. And I think if any other character had done that, I don't think it would have been as powerful.
No.
I was going to say earlier, like, with things with Willow, we expect her to be very emotional. Mm-hmm. And if Willow had sent something like that, I would have expected that from Willow.
Mm-hmm.
But Anya, this flighty, flaky, like, oh, I'm in my own world, who had a real moment, it was just so, it hit you. And you're like, oh my God! It was so good.
I like Willow's... why do all my shirts have such stupid things on them? Like, can I dress like a grown-up kid? I
know, bro. That was awesome. Damn right, your stupid shirts.
See, again, Willow and I are a lot alike.
Well, she didn't have a cool blog. Nerdshirtdujour.blogspot or WordPress?
No, but I had that Powerpuff Girl shirt. I so wish I did. Yeah.
Powerpuff Girls are awesome.
How about I got another one, and it's actually funny.
Oh my god, are you gonna make me cry again?
Nope. No, this is to bring up the lighten up the mood. There's a Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
Been around since like the 1500s. He wasn't always called Santa, but you know, Christmas night, flying reindeer, coming down a chimney, all true. All true? Well, he doesn't traditionally bring presents so much as, you know, disembowel children, but otherwise.
Wasn't that a movie?
I don't know. Santa Claus.
Black Christmas.
Black Christmas.
Oh, what about the Avengers got to get with the assembling?
Oh, yeah, the Avengers assembled. That was foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Like for the 12,000th time during this season. Yeah. I mean, episode, series.
Can I give you another, can I, not a quote, but there's another trivia foreshadowy thing.
Mm-hmm.
The DVD commentary for Restless, they mentioned Joyce being in the wall. And they say that during that this is our first hint of Joyce's sickness, and that Buffy will not be able to get to her or save her.
Ooh.
Mm. And also, in the previous episode, I Was Made to Love You, you know, April cracked Katrina's ribs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And Buffy was there when April died.
Mm-hmm.
So, Buffy sitting there with a dead April just kind of gave me chills.
She should have been home with her mother.
Damn.
No, you had to say it.
That wouldn't have saved her.
It wouldn't have mattered what had happened.
Yeah. It wouldn't have mattered.
Done anything.
Illyrio, do you want to do ratings and get out of here? You got like 5 minutes, buddy.
I'll do a rating and I got to go immediately, actually. And then you guys will be listening to voicemails and music at the end of when I publish. I need to rate this episode a 10 because as someone who's lived through a parent dying and it not being really expected and being youngish, I was younger than Buffy's character. I was younger than Buffy at the time, and every single bit of hold your breath, what in the world is going on? Is this real? That this episode presented was as true to life as I've ever seen it. And no music, which I didn't notice until someone told me. Mm-hmm. And the no cuts, which I didn't notice until someone told me. Awesome stuff. So I commend Joss Whedon and his assistant, Josh Eden. and I have to say, this is excellent. Excellent, excellent. And I bid you adieu. I will mute my headphones so there's no feedback. And you guys just hang up when you're done.
Okay.
Arrivederci tutti.
Bye, Illyrio. Have fun.
Well, I think that this episode is unreadable. I don't think even say giving it a 10 would do it justice because it's so far beyond that. Mm-hmm. I thought it's such a... in a different way than other episodes that I've really enjoyed. This one was like a slice of life episode that was very, very, very real. And I noticed while watching the episode again, like I said at the beginning, no music, no cuts. And when I realized that this entire episode would probably have no score, then it was... whenever that happens on a movie or a TV show or anything like that, that means, well, to me at least, the creators are letting you make your own decisions. Whereas, you know, music and lighting and camera cuts and swooshes, they're all made to direct you somewhere, to make you feel something. Like when the music swells, it's usually when things are getting so emotional and all this stuff. But no, they didn't need all that stuff because then that would have taken it from the realness to just, okay, it's a TV show we're watching. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I really appreciated and enjoyed that immensely. There's nothing bad that I can say about this episode. I enjoyed, you know, enjoy is again another sad, wrong word to use. I don't enjoy someone dying. But I thought it was very, I thought it was well done. Very well done. And I, you know, what more can I say?
I can't rate this episode. I can't. Just like I couldn't, even if I was forced to pick a quote, because I don't feel right doing that. And I feel kind of half stupid right now for crying when I was saying that. But it was even with the vampire at the end, it was way too real for me. Mm-hmm. Personally. So, huzzah to Sweden for making one of the most emotional episodes of television I've seen ever, and I happened to watch it on the same night right before I watched Breaking Bad. So needless to say, I'm a little fucked up right now.
You need some Mr. Belvedere.
I believe, it was absolutely the most emo night of television I've ever seen in a long time. But I know I can't go back. I mean, I'm in the I can't go back, and I know that, you know, and watch this episode again camp, but I know there are people that have seen this episode many times, and I know that there are people that have literally, nope, watched it once, remembered it, I'm good. And I'm definitely one of those, and if it wasn't for this particular podcast, I don't think I'd be able to continue with the series. Because I don't.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I don't want to see what happens next. I don't want to know. I don't want to go through the, I don't know, I'm assuming funeral and the aftermath and all that. I don't want to. I can't. And if it wasn't for this, for us recording, I'm telling you, I wouldn't have watched this episode again, and I wouldn't continue with the series.
I don't like the way that the episode ended with Dawn's hand creepily going towards her face. I understand that she needs to experience it for herself, but it just baffles me. Like, why? What do you need to touch the body for? You know? So, I don't know. I guess that's her way of processing it. But, ugh. The way the episode ended left me uneasy, even though I unlike you, Gabby, I want to know what happens next. Mm-hmm. So, it's tough because this show is either going to grow up really fast, or it's going to have two or three episodes that are really depressing, and then it's going to go back to its, you know, hijinks.
Hijinks.
So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing, is how the episode goes from here. Because I think it's going to be I hope it'll be a more grown-up show. Elements of the old ways.
Hybrid, yes. If you will.
Yes, yes, yes.
I know nothing. I'll give my rating and then Steph, you can give yours, right?
Sure.
If there is a rating. I wrote this down here. This is actually from a guy who's got a funny name. His name is Ian Shuttleworth. he is a British theater critic, and he contributed to this book called Reading the Vampire Slayer, an official critical companion to Buffy and Angel. And he wrote, any sneerer of Buffy in particular or genre work should simply be sat down in front of a television and told to shut up for 3/4 of an hour while they're shown the body. Their awestruck silence afterward may be taken as recantation or apology. It is simply one of the finest pieces of television drama and the single finest depiction of bereavement in any medium that I have ever seen. So in honor of Mr. Shuttleworth's quote, and a big middle finger to the Emmys that didn't nominate this episode for anything, I'm giving it 10 out of 10 awestruck silences. Because it's awesome. It's so good. It's so good on an emotional level. It's so good on a technical level. It's so good just watching the acting, and then also like, and you know, like, oh my gosh, I love these characters. You know,
there's and there's so much crap out there that gets awards, and I can't believe this did not get anything for anything. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, like I even said again earlier, I didn't think that this show had it in it to do this episode. I really didn't. Mm-hmm. And halfway through the episode, I'm like, wow, they're really going there. Like, I was waiting for Buffy to start, you know what I mean? Like, I was waiting for the episode to become, it didn't. I don't even know what to say. Because like even Robin was saying that in the guy's critique, you know, how many times have I said that this is so ridiculous? Like, really, how much longer can they, you know? But, yeah. Joss Whedon stuck it to me.
I love that it takes the body for all of you to actually say his name correctly. Finally.
Whedon.
I say it correctly every time.
Oh. Sorry.
Somewhat, like, whatever. I'm not going to go back to the first episode. Josh Eden. Anyways.
Hey, Steph, did you want to say anything? It's your show, Mother of Podcasting.
No. I think, at first glance, you just can't take Buffy seriously. It's a teenage show. It's a show about teenagers, and so it's such a genre show, and you know, with this and Hush and Restless, Joss is able to stretch his legs, and you know, there's nothing left to say.
I remember there's like a handful of things that I've watched on screen that have made me cry. Anya's speech is now going to be probably in the top five. Because there's only, no, I just take that, it's only been four. I remember that when, spoiler alert, when Boone died and Lost, the end of My Girl, and yeah, it was just like, come on.
Okay, you know what
has
reminded me of this lately is we were watching Six Feet Under with Robin, and That's My Dog. I'm just like, that is just, it's so painful to watch. This is like that. It's just unrelenting. You cannot escape from it. It's just... because these characters are, you know, so...
they're real.
Yeah. Such great characters.
Oh, my God. I think if I... Oh, hey, let's compare times we cried at stuff. I remember, like, the only other times I've sobbed...
I didn't mean to do that.
No, sobbed uncontrollably, where I've had to hit pause and take a break and come back. I couldn't do that last night because I was watching it with somebody else, but I was that hysterical cry... Okay, I was watching it with Tammy last night. Yeah. When I was that... I did it a couple times, but especially during the Anya scene, I was, you know, like hysterical crying where it almost sounds like you're laughing.
Yeah.
That is how I was. The only other times watching something I was that hysterical was at the very, 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 very end of Lost. Yeah. And whenever I watch the movie or listen to the soundtrack of Once... I'm telling you, that movie fucking slays me at the very end. I am hysterical, sobbing, snotting, crying. And if I hadn't been watching with Tammy last night, I probably would have stopped it again. Or, like, forever at that scene. Or I would have taken a break, cried hysterical in the fetal in my bathroom, and then come back out. I'm telling you, it fucked me up.
Did you watch... did you watch Sex and the City?
Yeah.
The episode where, spoiler alert, Miranda's mother dies.
No. I don't remember.
Oh, I was going to watch all of that.
Sorry.
I don't remember.
That episode gets, like, I will bawl at that. Like, I can just watch that one scene and I lose it because it's so, Sex and the City again, I don't know why we're talking about this, but anyways, they always throw jokes in through the entire episode. Like at the funeral, the priest says Miranda's brother's name and he calls her her husband and they all look at each other like, really? Today you get it mixed up? And then when they're taking the body out in the casket and then she's walking behind it alone and then she starts breaking down and then Carrie comes in and puts her arm around her and then you look up and Steve's there and no one invited Steve. It was just like, oh my god. It was so good.
Oh my god. Anyways. There's like, oh my god, in the movie The City of Angels with Nicolas Cage, there is this scene.
I'm sorry, Robin.
I'm sorry. I have to admit this. Spoiler alert.
Go ahead. I was going to watch that too.
Oh my god.
No, I've seen it.
When Meg Ryan is riding the bike on the way to the farmer's market or whatever, and she stretches out her arms and then gets hit by the car or whatever, boom. I fucking lose my shit and I cry and I can't stop and I will actually scream, don't go to the market. I will scream because I don't want it to happen. And I've seen it, and yet, every time that movie's on, I'll watch it, and it's always that part, and I always get hysterical, and I can't look away, and I'm a mess.
It reminds me, actually, of Die Hard, where, like, Ellis is in there, and he's just trying to wager, he's being a jerk, he's like, hey, gold watches, I can talk for you, and Holly's like, no. You know, and John McClane's on the other side of the walkie-talkie. Really, he's like, listen, you gotta shut him up. No, Ellis, damn it, Ellis. Don't talk to him. And freaking,
I don't know what you're talking about, but the season finale of the second season of Doctor Who, when Rose
what?
Is gone, is, I mean, it's so sad.
Rose.
And her chipmunk cheeks and her buck teeth.
Robin, should we read,
beautiful.
I love her.
Read feedback while we're here, or is that something we should do afterwards? And
why are you asking me? I'm the guest.
Hey, Robin, would you like to read some feedback?
Yeah, I guess we can.
Or Stephanie, should we read feedback after today?
Robin, read feedback.
Oh, you want me to read it? I guess I asked for it.
I'll be
okay. This is yes, and I put one of my favorite shots from The Body, which is the up close Sarah Michelle Gellar, like sweaty, and her lips are all chapped. Oh, it's so horrible. It's so. That's complete.
I thought that was so accurate to show her vomiting and then sweating right after.
Yeah.
Perfect. Just, like, so subtle. Anyways, let's go on.
All right, here we go. Kelly, Taryn, Corey, and 11 others like this.
13 others.
Oh, more liked. Facebook, you can never tell who likes or votes in polls. Trust me. All right, Simone says, I just hope you guys really appreciate the work that went into this episode. It's kind of amazing. The writing, acting, direction, and choices, like not to use music at all, so it feels real and never lets you take a breath. And Anya's speech rips my heart out every single time, so much so that years ago, when I had a close friend to watch the last two seasons with and discuss the show with, she would quote that speech and literally have me in tears one sentence in. And she'd laugh, and I'd cry. I love Anya. And Joyce matters. I know it didn't seem like she didn't, or like she was a bad mom, but she means a lot to all the Scoobies and us, the fans.
So okay, can we talk about Joyce?
What?
Sure.
Okay.
You gonna change the subject?
Well.
Just kidding.
Oh, okay.
It's all about Joyce.
Joyce matters, yes. Okay, it's amazing to me. Okay, just like somebody said early on, that Joyce is just kind of like a plot point. She's just like, she's not really a developed character per se. She's more of a, she's whatever the plot needs her to be.
She's mom.
She's the mom. And, okay, was it, the end of season three? Into season two. Into season two. When Joyce finds out that Buffy is the Slayer and kicks her out of the house. And she goes to L.A. Is that what turned y'all off of Joyce and why you feel like she's a bad mother and that you never really liked her? Is that the whole point?
I don't even know.
No, you're going to answer for this.
No,
I'm just
kidding. No, I'm trying to think back to...
Why did you make Joyce die? What
the heck? Trying to think back to first season Joyce. Like, I never liked her, never disliked her. I just thought parents on TV shows are just, ugh. You know? Mm-hmm. They always get in the way. They always say the wrong thing. And when we were first introduced to her, she always was going to the art gallery and worrying about herself. And it wasn't until this season when she got sick when I think, I don't know if it was meant, it was done on purpose for us to, you know, start feeling feelings for Joyce and then so that her death would hit us that much more. But I never felt either, you know, towards Joyce at all. I just thought that she was really into herself. You know? And that's why I didn't really care for her either way. Anyway, sorry. It's tough. I can't say that because after this episode, I'm just like, oh my God, Joyce. You know?
I remember, maybe I'm using revisionist history, but I remember feeling kind of like, oh, she's a single mom and she's just trying to do whatever she can. Whatever. Uh-huh. I don't remember hating on her. Did I hate on her? I don't remember. I mean, maybe we all joked that she was the worst mom ever or whatever because she's a little flighty. But it was like,
ultimately,
you know, she was a single mom and her daughter's a vampire slayer. I mean, it's fucking ridiculous. Think about it.
Yeah. Well, okay, the reason that I brought this up mainly is because at Dragon Con, Christine Sutherland was there on a panel.
Steph,
with
that Joyce.
I did. I had my picture made with her. She was very nice, of course. What else would she be? But she was there with James Marsters and Nicholas Brandon on a panel at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And Heath Fowler, one of our listeners, he asked a question. He asked, you know, what would you wish your... I think it was what would you have your character do differently? Did your character do... And of course, Nicholas Brandon, because this was his first job, he would not say anything against, you know, anything Joss Whedon did or say or whatever. But Christine Sutherland said that she has always said that she cannot understand why Joyce kicked Buffy out of the house, that no mother would do that. And it was more like a TV dramatic event, I think, for me. I think it was not that I could really buy that Joyce would kick her out. It was just a plot device. You know, something to get Buffy out of town, to get her in LA and broaden the show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, it's really a TV. It's kind of a TV thing to see a parent kick somebody out of a teenager out of their house.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, I guess it, I don't know. Maybe it's just. I mean, I ran away from home a lot, but I did not. I don't think I've ever been kicked out.
No.
Known anybody be kicked out? Yeah, I got another quote from Lorna Jowett, who writes in the book Sex and the Slayer. Nothing to do with sex, but she says Joyce represents stability and normality. And, you know, and she's talking about how it affected the Scoobies. Her death destroys the illusion that normal life is trouble-free. It's just as challenging as encountering supernatural forces. I thought that was cool.
And yeah, I can say that Joyce would mean that there's hope for normalcy.
Mm-hmm. Just like, really? You know, okay. we fight demons all the time, but Mom, you know, she's at the art gallery, you know, she's meeting guys, Brian.
Flower-scenting guys.
Oh, great. I hope Brian doesn't show up.
Awkward. You know what's weird? Like, going back to, like, the first 15
Robin,
minutes.
Time out. Robin, when you put your glasses on, is it because we don't want us to read your expression?
Yeah. This is just about ridiculous art stuff in the background. But, like, in the first, like, 15 minutes, when they're really, really focusing, when they're really, really focusing on Buffy and what she's up to, like, there's a shelf in the background, and I'm thinking, oh, that's an interesting piece of art. Why would you see that piece of art? Did Joyce bring that home from the art gallery? Aww. Or even, like, when we're in the room where she throws up, I'm like, we've never seen this room before. Why have we never seen this room before? And as a matter of fact, I was getting super irrational when watching with Tammy and was like, hey, is this a real house or is this a set? Because when the doors open, it looks like outside. Do you see trees going? I think it's real. Is this a real house? Like, I was like, it's weird.
At some point, it's a real house, and at some point, it's a set.
I've driven past it.
But the house that they use for exterior shots, did they ever use it for interior shots? Or was interior stuff always
set? Sometimes they have to interact and go right out to the front. They've done it, but not often, because it is a private residence.
And did they change the house when they changed seasons? I mean, changed networks?
Well, we haven't got there yet.
Oh, you?
How do you know?
Oh, jeez.
They changed networks. Everybody knows that.
Should we fire through some more Facebook stuff?
Yeah. Okay. But, oh, yeah. All right. Tomas says, I never cry to TV or movies, no matter how sad it gets. Anya's speech in this episode is the only exception to that.
Yeah.
Taylor Dole says, excuse me while I go hide in the corner and cry a lot. Jason Abel says, I watched this episode for the first time at work. I was 100% spoiled on her death. I still Aww. Sobbed like a baby. Only the Walking Dead video game made me cry harder.
Okay.
Dude.
Okay.
I guess I'd have to see the video game. And, of course, I was referencing Die Hard earlier, so I shouldn't say it. On rewatch, I can mostly hold myself together until Anya starts speaking.
Yes.
Probably the most true thing the show has ever said is between Tara and Buffy. Buffy, was it sudden, your mother? Tara, no. Yes, it's always sudden. Uh-huh. Susan says, it is the only Buffy episode I skip. Unless I feel I need a really good cry, because I will cry every time. Anya's speech especially kills me. Mm-hmm. Michael just says, nope. Nutty says, I'm not rewatching this with you guys, and not because it's not a good episode. It's too well done, but it's hard on the heart. When Joss wasn't even nominated for an Emmy for this, I remember current fans being so mad. We realized if it didn't get it for this, it wasn't going to happen. All the awards were deserved for this episode.
Uh-huh.
Rachel Horn says, the reindeer part was nice. Patrick Thomas says, I don't know. I'll be watching this episode again for a long time for personal reasons.
A lot of people have feelings with, like, that. Yeah.
Corey says, I know some have their issues with this episode. The paramedics, Anya's speech, vampire at the end. Okay. But it's definitely one of the best and nearly perfect. What?
I think he's saying, I think maybe the paramedics...
leaving.
Yeah, maybe so, yeah. Paramedics leaving, Anya's speech is too hard to watch, and the vampire at the end seems too just weird. And, when I see the vampire at the end, I think, obviously it's contractual that there has to be a fight in the...
in the no, it's nothing like that.
No, I realize that, but... I can't help but think that.
I remember it horrified me the first time. I was like, really? Really? You know?
Yeah. But, I did the same thing. I was like, really? Vampire now? For reals?
But But, you know, this is life goes on, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer's life goes on as well.
Was it the end of the budget year, and they had to spend the money on the dusting so that they could continue to keep doing that in next season?
He also says, passion, becoming the body, the gift, and once more with feeling are probably my top five viewed episodes. ETA, probably going to watch it twice tonight, second time with the commentary.
Yeah.
Ezri says, this episode is more than 12 years old, and for me it is still the saddest hour on TV I've ever watched. Afterwards, and always need to call my mom. Teo says, this episode is just so outstanding. What I really admire of this one is just how realistic the episode is and see the impact it has on people. Just one of the greatest episodes of television ever. Sarah MG gives one of her best performances, if not the best, of her entire career and the show. The first minutes for me are the worst. I dread that situation.
I do too. It's like my greatest fear.
Yeah. Oh, God. I did not want to rewatch that 15 minutes again. And Tammy's like, no, we have to start from the beginning. And I'm like, I don't want to. You're mean. And I hate you.
Ian says, people often talk about how realistic the episode is, but reading those words fails to capture the essence of it. To me, the real strength of the body is it is the way it makes the surreal nature of that situation so concrete and real. Very well put, even though I can't read, apparently. sorry. Lynette says, it is uncanny how much this and the following episode mirror my own experience. He captured it perfectly. I didn't realize how the loss of my mother 8 years before I watched this would be so incredibly raw and fresh. I had no idea it was coming, which doubled the impact. Even Buffy's response was so close to my own, I almost threw up with her. It was just as surreal and silent, too. Totally separated from the rest of the world and baffled by its ability to keep turning. Poor Willow, poor Anya, poor everyone. And Anya's speech, that really hit home for me. I remember being so upset because this wonderful woman who had been the center of my universe should have had trumpets blaring and choirs singing as she passed. There should have been thunder and lightning, but instead she was breathing and she wasn't. Just gone. It should have been epic, but instead it was clinical. I was totally aware of the death process as I was a nurse, had sat by many a bed and seen what happens, but it still seemed wrong, off-center, unreal. Yes, he nailed it for sure. My mom even had the same tumor, same surgery, same cerebral accident, and in the same time frame.
Oh my God, Lynette, you're killing me.
Lynette, you are very... Thank you for sharing. thanks a lot for sharing, Lynette. I have to go back to I forget which Buffy episode it was, but I believe I was on the episode, and it was the episode where Joyce is discharged after having her surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that surgery is kind of what, like, it didn't fix what happened. We thought everything was going to be okay, and you know, me and Steph and people who have seen the show before were just like, yeah.
You guys who are watching for the first time, you think that this is nothing. You think that this is, you're wondering, why are we doing this?
Yeah, another TV sickness.
The old, that something with somebody's brain may have happened in another show once that I watched. And it was hard not to mention it.
Yeah, thank you. Yvette says, I honestly can't watch this again. It's just too devastatingly real. Amy says, my favorite episode, hands down, one of the single best episodes of any television show. Celia, sorry, I butchered your name. She says, I don't watch this one too often because it's so raw and it makes me so sad. It makes me think about mortality too much, which can be downright depressing. I put it on whenever I need a good cry.
Oh my God! There's not other stuff? Whoa.
Vincent says, having lost a parent, this episode meant and still means a lot to me. It's the most honest portrayal of the emotional vacuum of grief I've ever seen in fiction, and quite possibly the very best episode of television I've ever seen. Strangely cathartic, as I'm sure many others have said and will say, the moment that always makes my eyes at least a little bit moist is Anya's fruit punch rant, where she describes the frustration of not knowing the socially acceptable way to deal with death, as well as the difficulty of grasping the concept of death itself, which is especially notable considering she spent many centuries handing it out like some kind of handy outy thing.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. Lindsay says, this episode is so raw and powerful. The two moments that always get me are when Buffy tells Giles that they are not to move the body. Her emotion was so raw and real. The horror at having referred to her mom as a body. And Anya's speech. Also, the lack of music just magnifies all the emotion.
Yep.
Nikki says, so heavy, might have to skip rewatching this episode myself this time around. You know, skip this conversation going on here.
Well, Corey asks if those that are going to skip the episode, are they going to listen to the are they going to skip the episode, but are they going to listen to the podcast?
I think they will listen to us.
To it. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people have been waiting.
Have fun with that, guys. None of us get emotional at all. We stay very even.
Oh, listen to this. Vincent says, I'll repeat here. If anyone puts together a compilation of all the times the potential have spoken ill of Joyce, I will remix it.
Yep, that was put in the spoiler group. We were talking about like how funny it would be to play that back for you guys.
You're like, I'm so sorry, I'll never say anything ill of anyone ever.
Look what you did.
You killed her with your words.
Nick says, I've been racking my brain for an episode of television that knocked me on my ass the way the body did, and I got nothing. The body is not only the best episode of Buffy, it's also the best episodes of anything.
Uh-huh.
Bob says, great episode. I'm also one of those that can't watch it.
Yeah, Bob.
Karen says, just rewatched it and agree with everything that's been said. I have never really understood the vampire at the end, but I guess it's a reflection on the way life goes on. In the midst of everything, Buffy will continue to do what needs to be done. I also understand a little better that Dawn needed to see her mother. Never caught Buffy's line before at the end. Very interesting.
Can't
remember what she says.
You know what? Speaking of a line that no one mentioned, when she's talking to the doctor, and then he's like, well, did she feel pain? No. And then it's, I don't know, like, what did he say? Or she thought her, like, I don't have to lie to you to make you feel better.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. Yeah. That's wow.
I thought that was awkward. I had to go back and watch that again. I was like, did he just say that?
Yeah.
And that's what I was like. I'm like, did he just say that, or was she thinking that he said that?
Is this a subtitle on the screen?
Uh-huh.
Heidi says, I can't watch, but will listen to the potentials. Sent an email, but like others have said, it hits too close to home for me in situations with family. Corey is watching it now. Changed his mind, apparently. he says he feels strangely disconnected from it, whereas I'm usually intensely invested in it.
Hmm.
Okay. Val says, the body was the very first ep of Buffy I ever saw.
What?
What?
That's
spoiler alert.
That's a hell of a way to get thrown into a series. I don't think a ton of fans can say it was their first.
Yeah,
the damn show, brilliant episode, was never nominated for an Emmy or even SMG. These were the actresses nominated in 2001. Lorraine Bracco for The Sopranos, Amy Brennan for Judging Amy, Edie Falco for The Sopranos, Marg Helgenberger for CSI, and Cela Ward for Once and Again. Who would you take off to replace SMG?
Well, okay.
Helgenberger?
Probably Mark Helgenberger.
These networks and studios, they pay firms for campaigns. So, but they, what did I read that Joss, he took out ads for this episode? Hold on, I've got it here somewhere.
But I find with all these award shows, they recycle nominees. It's the same Every year.
It's political.
Like Ducky Dale.
Hello?
Like Ducky Dale. Yeah. And Two and a Half Men every year, forever, Broadway.
Exactly. I just said the same thing. John Cryer for reals.
Who's watching
that show? Everyone says how horrible it is.
Anyways, yeah, I don't know.
That's another podcast.
It's going to be called Two and a Half Shits. That's how many we give to the show.
Yeah, see, like I said before, there's a bunch of bullshit out there that consistently gets awards. But what? I don't know. But then, like, this obviously strikes a chord with everybody unless you're a robot. And it's amazing television. But... in the course of this whole, I'm going to say something controversial right now. Could Joss Whedon consistently put out a show where every week it's something amazing and groundbreaking, instead of doing something, oh, this is entertaining me, and then do something amazing and groundbreaking, and then just simply entertain me, and then, like, would he be able to keep it up? Like, the same thing with the movies. Much Ado was fucking phenomenal. I think that was great, and it was like, The Avengers was entertaining, but it wasn't, in my opinion, fucking phenomenal.
I believe we saw the wrong movie. I haven't seen Much Ado, but The Avengers was.
Much Ado was fantastic.
And I don't know what you're talking about how Joss doesn't, like, put out entertaining stuff and every once in a while blow you away, because that's pretty much the
end. No, but I want him to consistently blow me away. That's the whole thing now. It's like, I want him to blow me away every week.
He can't do that.
Okay. All right, did you watch Dollhouse?
Ugh.
No, never.
Once. A piece of crap, in my opinion, and I couldn't even. I hit it and quit it. I couldn't do it.
That was because the part you saw.
You hit Eliza Dushku and quit her?
No.
The parts you watched were that had the network involvement. When the show was about to be canceled and they gave Joss time to wrap it up, it was friggin' amazing.
Of course.
When they let go of his hands and he was able to do what he wanted to do, It was crazy.
I don't want to crap on this show. I think back to, like, again, I watched The Body on the same night as I happened to watch Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad is a show that I think is amazing and perfect and, to me, the greatest show on television, my opinion, of course. But every week has always been amazing, amazing, like, consistently amazing, 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 amazing. I can't think of an episode that I can shit on. But then again, you're also talking about there's, what, 8, 12 exactly. episodes a season as opposed to, 18, 24.
They have 3 weeks to break an episode of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
When network shows have 8 days to film an episode, I don't know how long they have to write, but, you know, I mean, I know Joss, okay, this says that Joss told Christine Sutherland at the end of season 3 that her character would die in season 5. So he knew, you know, he had a plan of what was going to happen. And this is a show for teenagers. It's a kid's show. It's a show about empowerment. And the reason, and I've realized lately, the reason that it resonates with me so much is because at the time that I watched it, I was tied down at home with a small child.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot do just like podcasting here. I just lucked up tonight and was able to be free because I have all these people who are pulling me in different directions. I'm not under my own volition. I'm not under my own power. I am under all these people in my family who need me.
Mm-hmm.
And if they need me right now, I have to stop and go. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so when I watched it, that was a time in my life where I was like, oh, empowerment. I need to be empowered. And that's why it resonates so much with me.
I want to... Yep, sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was like, now that I... Again, I didn't believe... It's one of these things where for years you hear, oh my God, he's a genius. It's like, yeah, he's made stuff and has entertained me here and there. But it's been inconsistent to me. Again, this is all my opinion. But now that I see this, not that I want to see specifically this again, because emotionally and mentally and physically, I can't. I was physically, between, again, watching this and then Breaking Bad, I was physically felt ill last night. And I can't go through the game, but I want to see this kind of stuff. Like, more like, oh my God.
You will.
Like, you have this in you. Uh-huh. I kind of want to see it every week. And if it's only 8 episodes, you know, per season or per series, if you want to be like that, you know, if you want to use that terminology, that's cool. I want to see this. I want to see the A game every fucking week.
Yeah.
You ask for too much.
I don't think it is.
I don't think there's any show that goes on for like 22 episodes a season that every episode is freaking like groundbreaking or blows you away.
And this was a different time, you know. This was
But still, I'm again just giving my opinion.
Yeah, that's fine. Should I continue reading Facebook stuff?
Oh yeah. Oh yes. And I'm sorry. Go keep reading that.
No, it's okay.
There's only like 2 or 3 things left.
Yeah, I should power through them, especially Ray down here. Holy cow, Ray.
I'll read it. It's okay. Ray says, for me, this is by far the most honest and real look at death ever shown on TV. You can really feel the confusion and numbness that a person feels after the loss of a close loved one. It really is a great achievement for all involved. The network for giving Joss the freedom to tell the story his way. Joss for coming up with the concept and deciding not to include any music. For all the actors, especially Sarah Michelle Gellar, her work in that long scene where she finds Joyce at the beginning is just amazing. I love how everyone seems to react differently to Joyce's death. Buffy is numb, Anya is sad and confused, Xander is angry, Willow focuses on small details as a coping mechanism, etc. And I will disagree with the people criticizing the Anya speech. I thought it was so well done and powerful. The first time I watched the episode, that moment hit me the hardest and stuck with me the most. I find her feelings to be very true and very powerful. It's a moment that I have gone back and watched many times by itself without rewatching the whole episode. The episode is so true to life that it really is hard to watch. To actually watch. But I do feel like the tough emotions that it makes the viewer feel are actually healthy to feel from time to time. I agree. And I know that some people won't rewatch it, but I appreciate it so much that I will rewatch. I just recently went back and listened to the first introductory podcast that you guys ever did. And when Stephanie asked you guys what to expect, and the three newbies seemed to kind of say that they didn't expect the show to change their lives in any kind of lives and kind of thought of the show as some sort of high school show that was for teenage girls or something like that. When I listened to that, I immediately thought of this episode and how amazingly well done it is. The show really is much deeper than that image that some people have about it just being another WB or CW teen show. Thanks. Kick me while I'm down again. Okay. Episodes like this really elevate it above and beyond that. In my opinion, the show, and this episode in particular, really elevate network TV to heights that it had never gone to before and has rarely been reached since. Just amazingly powerful and well done. A true achievement in filmmaking.
Wow, we were ignorant.
I know, right?
Oh my God.
Peter says, I have been extremely fortunate. Oh, sorry, Rob, did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say, I kind of skimmed down to one of my favorite comments on this is Bear Medina says, thanks to this episode, I can't let or watch my mom fall asleep on any couch.
Oh, that's messed up and hilarious.
Go ahead,
it's okay. Peter writes, I've been extremely fortunate to have never yet lost an immediate family member. Or intimate family member to, sorry, I can't read anyways, to untimely death, but after watching the body, I felt that I had. I guess that's the highest compliment one can give it. Definitely one of the most artistic high points of Joss's career. Stunning. Yeah, I think it's just more of the same. Everyone's saying it, how great it is. It's great. Yeah. Really good episode.
Michael David says, can I request the beginning of Macho Man at the end of this episode? Body, can you feel my body?
Let's not.
Oh my god, it's messed up.
Illyrio, you better not do it. I know you're listening. I can't get to the emails, guys. But
I'm spent.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think we'll just all read the emails and the voicemails will be posted. And who knows? Maybe Illyrio will record himself by himself reading emails. But probably not.
Or edit this all out. Whatever. Was there email?
I'm sure there was.
Only a couple more pieces of trivia I have. It's Christine Sutherland lied around for 8 days.
Okay. Can we talk about how realistic she looked as a dead person?
Yes. I was wondering if it was her the entire time, because it seemed like it was. Like, they didn't pull out any, like, 6 feet under model corpses.
Oh, no.
Like, it was her.
Yeah. Yeah,
she's very good at being completely still.
Because when she was laying on like that gurney thing and then Don was looking over her, I was watching to see if her chest was going up and down. Mm. And I was just like, that's really her. Because I thought it might be a prosthetic as well. But anyways.
God, I love that shot from looking at Don looking over the body and in the background, Buffy's like on
Buffy's
her,
there, yeah.
Buffy's on the floor, like, watching. Ooh.
At the beginning when she hikes her skirt down because it's more, you know, I'm like, oh, bless you. And not the main way. I meant like the actual,
Yeah.
And the other piece of trivia I had was about the Willow and Terracus. And, you know, not to focus on it too much because, you know, honestly, Joss didn't want that. He wanted this whole to be the first kiss between Willow and Tara to just not be a very special episode centered around it.
Oh, I was gonna. That's what I wanted to bring up earlier, and I thought, and I thought at first, I'm like, why would he put this kiss in this episode? Like, this is a big thing. Then I was like, no, it's not a big thing. Like,
right.
It's not like their kiss shouldn't be discussed and dissected like we are doing this episode.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. He wrote he actually got a little bit of resistance from the WB, just kind of like, you sure you want to put a and he pretty much said this is the first and only time he said, if you do not let me put this in the show, I will quit.
Wow.
And actually, he says, to the network's credit, they not only aired it, but they did not advertise it. I thought that was pretty classy.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, this is a... This is a natural love. This is a quiet, simple moment. There's no huge discovery,
exactly.
No speech. And that's what's so groundbreaking about it. It's normal.
And that's it's normal, and that's what makes it unsettling. Because all this time, we've been watching unnatural deaths, and now, again, something completely natural and out of anybody's control.
Yeah. Because the show was on in a time where they had, you know, after-school specials of, like, this is the episode that we do with AIDS, this is the episode we do with this is the episode, and
if this was the teen show you guys thought it was going to be, it would totally have done that.
Yeah! I think I have to go back and listen to the very first episode we did, because everything that everyone is saying, we told you, I'll be like, wow, do I have egg on my face?
Yes. Okay, guys. That's
I have to go back and see what else I've, how many more feet I've shoved down my throat. Anyways.
So I've got email open. Do you want me to do that or no? We done.
How long have we been recording? 4 hours.
Oh my god,
now?
Forever. It's a quarter of time.
This is exactly the episode people want, though.
This is and this is a very special episode of Pixelcast. We're all working through our shit.
That's just normal.
Isn't it great though? Isn't it amazing without Illyrio? I'm kidding. Okay, go ahead. You know what? Pick. What? Let's do some. Are there like 35?
There's a bunch. There's okay. One. Well, of things I can read, 1, 2. Three, lots of voicemails. 3, 4, 5. There's emails though. There's like 5 or 6. There's 6 emails.
I don't think we can do voicemails, right? We need Illyrio.
No, we have to do right. We can do some email. Okay, I've got John Pavlich. Mm-hmm. I will read him. I'll go. He's the newest, or should I start with the oldest?
Yeah, he did say that he sent it just, you know, about an hour ago.
Okay.
That would get on the podcast.
Okay. Let's go with him. All right. So we have from John. Hi, John. The first time I was truly faced with death, my grandmother had passed away when I was 10. The very second after my mother told me the news, I broke down in tears and cried for a good long while. Since then, I've been more introspective and stiff upper-lipped about it. My stepfather died this past March, and my mother's been fighting cancer all summer. I should point out that although she now weighs 20 pounds less than I do and is still quite weak, she's now cancer-free and is going to pull through. Yay! All of these experiences make me think of the body almost immediately. I know most people have a hard time watching it. For me, it's kind of comforting. Just like you, Robin. The episode gets it right. Things are oddly quiet, almost peaceful, as if the world... As if the world around you has been laid to rest. I watch this episode from time to time to remind myself I'm not alone. Everyone deals with death, and it's okay to cry your eyes out or just be really quiet. There's strength in numbers. Back in season 2, Angelus asks what would be left if you stripped away everything that makes up the Slayer. Buffy says what would be left is herself. And we see that in this episode. That's enough. The way she manages the strength to tell Dawn what's happened is kind of amazing. This is a situation Buffy can't solve with violence or magic. It's real. It's human. And it really shows what she's made of. The Body is one of my favorite episodes of Buffy and television in general. Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. Thank you, John, for sharing.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. John, I'm right there with you, my mother. This has been a terrible year for my mother. She's been going through. But, I mean, I don't feel like when I watch this, I don't feel like I could lose my mother at any moment. And I don't think about losing my mother, but, yeah, it makes you appreciate your mother more. But, I mean, just like we've been talking about that this is a show about teenagers, but we're seeing Buffy maturing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she has to now.
She has to now.
Surprise!
Yeah.
Oh.
I'll read Val's
okay.
email. Everybody hurts.
Oh.
Oh my God.
Don't put that song on either, Illyrio.
Hey, Skarg. I think a lot of us couldn't wait until you got to this episode, while at the same time dreading it because of the emotional impact. I'm just going to throw out some random thoughts, because after watching this latest Breaking Bad, my head is spinning. The Body was the very first episode Buffy I ever saw. That's a hell of a way to get thrown into a series. I don't think a ton of fans can say that it was their first. On your initial viewing, did everyone fall for the first seconds of reviving Joyce's fake-out scene? I know I did. I thought it was brilliant of Joss to do that happy Christmas dinner scene. I'm sure someone will fill you in on why it's done. Then going back into the smash cut, drawing us back into reality. So many emotional, well-acted, memorable scenes, but the one that knotted my stomach was when Buffy goes to tell Dawn about Joyce. You're just waiting for it to happen and dreading it. Then you see Buffy in the background passing Dawn's classroom window. The dread starts to build. Buffy coming into the classroom to get her. Then that final talk outside the room was intense and stomach churning for me. Plus, I felt terrible for Dawn. part of me wanted to hear all the conversation, but I'm happy with the way Josh filmed it behind the glass in the classroom without hearing Buffy's terrible news, because it was hard enough to watch it unfold, although you can read it with the captions on. But it always kind of bugs me a little seeing a couple of nosy classmates standing there staring at them through the window. Go back to your damn drawings. Favorite scene will always be the Scooby scene in Willow's room. I just adore it from start to finish. Did anyone jump when it's all quiet, and then all of a sudden you hear a loud smash and find out Xander put his hand through the wall? Hey, Gabby, the Willow Tara kiss. Did you want to hurl or thought it was a sweet moment?
Neither. I explained earlier, it made me angry. It frustrated me. Because, again, I internalized it way too much, and that's not what I would have wanted.
Maybe there should have been another "I need a hug" from Mutiny in this one.
Aww.
Brilliant episode. It's forever in my top five of the series. 10 out of 10 disemboweling Santa Clauses.
Boo.
I'm going to get some wine now. Have a great podcast. Can't wait to listen. And someone make sure earlier I recorded himself.
Yeah, for the love of God.
We're not doing this again.
At this moment, we really hope he has.
Take care, Val. P.S. Kim and Gabby, thank you for your awesome commentary on I Was Made to Love You. Mainly the last 13 minutes. It was even better than I hoped.
Oh, my God.
From the Spike stuff, possibly ordering a Buffy bot, to your Joyce freak outs, it was amazing hearing those reactions. I found it so interesting that you thought someone killed Joyce instead of anything medical. Just curious, did you change your minds about that after you had time to think about it some more?
Anyway, I thought it was Glory all day, every day.
Anyway, it was a lot of fun listening to you guys. No exaggeration. I listened to it at least 10 times. I couldn't get enough of it. Obviously, I need help.
Obviously. Yeah, I really enjoy listening to you guys. I'm exaggerating.
I fast forward to the end. I listen to the end first.
So rude, Robin. Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Somebody read Dylan's email.
I don't have it open. Go
Dylan.
Ahead. Holy. Yeah, you wish, Robin.
Holy crap.
Go
man.
Ahead, Robin. Robin can't. Okay.
I got it.
Yeah,
damn.
As soon as I sign into that email, I'll get logged out of this Hangout.
It's a good thing I learned how to read. All right. Greetings, Gax or Skark? If Robin is in the house.
What's up, y'all?
What's up? Oh, yeah, this isn't an episode of Angel. Oh, sorry. Or whoever else is invited to the party, if anyone. Anyway, is Jen. Din. Why can't I spell read tonight? It's Dylan. You're sending an email this time instead of just a comment on the Facebook group, as I feel this episode is an episode that really merits a bit of more input than your run of the mill Monster of the Week episodes. And personally, this is probably number one or two on my top list of episodes of not just Buffy, but any TV series ever. This is something very intense. No, I'm sorry. There is something very intense about how this episode is designed to bring particular unpleasant and unnumbing bizarre experience of losing a loved one into this small screen. I mean, take a character in a show that is not considered all that important in the overall scheme of things. A character that we often take for granted and we jokingly make regular comments about on how him or her should die in the show simply because it will change the dynamic somehow. Or we simply don't like it at all that much. Now let's kill this character and make it feel like you are really losing someone you care about. And that is what this episode feels like to me. By making the experience as brutal and realistic as possible, they've managed to put you in the position of the ones left behind and how they go through the experience. An experience of shock, really, as really as the grieving part hasn't been reached yet. The clever editing, the lack of background music, and the disturbing but somehow hyper-realistic background sounds that are brought into focus all throughout the episode to create the sense of tunnel vision that helps enhance the sense of numbness that surrounds the entire episode, and sometimes the lack of sound at all. Little things like wind chimes next to the window, the sounds of cars passing by as Buffy waits for the ambulance, the sounds of kids playing outside the house when she opens the back door to take a breath. Then there's the harsh edit cuts that go from the Christmas dinner or a quick scenario where the paramedics bring Joyce back, then quickly back to the harsh reality. All in all, a really cleverly put together episode that really makes you feel the experience instead of just watching it as it happens. When in some cases, I've heard it's really hard episode to go through if you have recently experienced a similar loss yourself. Too realistic, perhaps. My only gripe with this is some of the acting and dialogue of the rest of the Scoobies while in Willow's room can be a little too overdone, but only a little. Overall, a great episode that's perhaps the TV equivalent of getting suddenly hit by a car, slapped in the face, as the case may be. A wake-up call to remind everyone once and again, that in the Whedonverse, death can come at any time and no one is safe. A 10 out of 10 certainly for me. Can't wait to hear your thoughts and reactions. Cheers.
Thanks, cheers.
Norm!
I agree with everything except I don't think that the scene of the dorm room was overdone at all. I thought it was just perfect.
Yeah. It was the characters. It was Xander, Will, Anya, and Tara.
I don't think anything in this episode was overdone. I don't.
Especially
it was
not
damn near perfect.
Especially not the calves of the vampire at the end. Those were not overdone.
They were underdone.
And not trimmed.
I'm going to read Heidi's email.
Heidi.
Heidi, hello, Gax and guests. This is a superbly done episode of television. It is so well done that I usually skip it or only watch for Joss's commentary. This episode makes me feel all those feelings that come after a loved one dies, which is why it is such an amazing episode. The shock, disbelief, the feeling that it isn't really happening, it must be a dream. And the what-if scenarios that play around your head. This episode shows all of that. I don't have much else to say about this one. I don't envy you for having to talk about it just because I don't really know what can be said, Heidi. I agree. So much has been said. It's all been said.
It's all been said.
Rachel sent one in. Rachel Horn says, loss, the feelings, they pull you so hard and so sore. Our hearts facing loss will hurt ever more. We see in her face such panic and pain as she frantically wonders if she'll feel whole again. Naught can replace or make her feel better. All she wants one more time is her damn soft blue sweater. Ah, Joyce loved it so. Oh, Rachel, that was great.
So great.
Belinda Murphy. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was like, have we seen the blue sweater before? No.
Probably. It's probably got some little silly creature on it. Belinda Murphy. I don't want to leave anybody out since we've read so many. All right, Belinda Murphy. G'day, Gax.
G'day.
Several podcasts on the body, and not one has commented on the following. After Joyce's autopsy, the question arises of whether or not Joyce suffered in her final moments. The surgeon tells Buffy that Joyce did not suffer, but at the same time, we hear him say that Joyce suffered very much. I don't recall this. It's just one of those many quirks of this episode which plays on Buffy's confused mental state following her mother's death. But please tell me that you noticed it too, and I'm not imagining the whole thing. Keep up the good work. Trio from Belinda in London.
I don't think that he said that she suffered at the same time. I think what's caught her off guard is the same thing that we all, like, what? What did he just say? Like, why would I lie to you? Or something along those lines.
I'm lying to you to make you
make
feel,
you feel better.
Yeah. I don't think he said that. I think that's what Buffy heard.
Right.
And
right.
So I don't think that that she did suffer at all, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking this up right now.
Yeah, there's so many times when you go through, when you're going through this process, everybody says the same thing to you, and they want to make you feel better, and they want to help, and nobody knows how to help. And when my father-in-law died, I remember everybody said, call me if you need me. If there's anything you need, just call me. And I'm thinking, what can you do? You can't do anything. But everybody, it makes them feel better to say certain things.
Uh-huh.
Just out of ceremony, out of, you know, just out of habit of, that's just what you say when somebody dies.
The lines in the script say, Buffy, you sure there wasn't a lot of pain? And the doctor says, absolutely, I think we can be almost positive about that. And then, you know, the dub is, absolutely, I have to lie to make you feel better. So I don't think basically even says that. There was pain. I don't know.
Well,
it's all made to make us discuss it, guys. It's what we're doing.
Yeah, when somebody dies, you don't. There's no way of knowing. There's no way of knowing. She probably didn't. She probably just, you know, she may have a headache and then just passed out.
It's like when they say shoot him in the head, less suffering. How do you know? It probably will hurt more.
I know that. Yeah.
Anyways,
this sudden hemorrhaging from a ruptured arterial vessel near where the tumor was removed. Sometimes these things aren't detectable and sometimes they aren't. Joyce was aware of the possibility of a rupture and the effects. She didn't even get on the phone so clearly. This was very sudden.
Uh-huh.
I see. Oh, she didn't even get on the phone so clearly. This was very sudden. I'm reading it wrong. So she may have had a little nausea and probably passed out as it happened. I doubt there was much pain. And even if someone had been by her side, flashes of Buffy being in Joyce, it's doubtful that it could have been dealt with in time. So, like I said earlier, when we did that podcast where she had that surgery, you know, she was aware that if it was a rupture, you know, she could go, and she didn't. I don't think she must not have told Buffy. I don't know. It was like, oh, everything's all fine. She got a surgery and she's fixed. Tumor's removed, but unfortunately, no.
Great episode, guys.
Yeah, I know.
And then they're all downhill.
I like what Joss says at the end. You know, and he's talking about how it cuts before she touches Joyce, before Dawn touches Joyce. He's like, and there is no resolve, there is no lesson, there is only death. Well, I hope you all had a good time. I sure did.
we also, during the commentary, we got to experience Josh drinking his tea. Right.
Yeah,
drinking what?
Tea.
Drinking his tea.
Oh.
And kind of, you could hear him getting a little emotional during the Willow part. It's a good listen.
Even the very first scene when Buffy goes mommy, goes mother, mommy.
Yeah.
You know, he's saying that, you know, it was hard for him to talk about that scene because it was so great. And she says mommy, that's supposed to show her going, reverting from an adult back to a child.
Of course.
When you lose your mother. Yeah.
All right, maybe we should wrap this up and go to voicemails, guys.
Okay, sounds good.
What's next time on the show, Stephanie?
Oh, Jesus, I have no idea.
Something equally depressing.
Season 2, episode 17, forever.
Episode 17 is forever.
And I signed up the guest on that one, too, and I swear to God, guys, I'm getting off potential cast. I won't be back for a while.
Okay. That's okay. We like you.
I know you guys like me, but you know, I got my detractors in the audience.
Really?
Haters gonna hate.
Beat them up. Dang.
Actually, I have not heard that at all. It's just my own paranoia.
I've got my own detractors. People have been wanting me off for years. Convinced of it.
Perfect.
Well, I think we all did a great job today here, so... I hope everybody out there was satisfied. Are you satisfied?
I need a hug. I'm gonna go curl up in the fetal now.
I'll pretend I'm Illyrio. Bye, everybody.
I'm gonna pretend I'm Kimberly. Namaste. Hi, Bree. I see you in the background.
I mean, there we go. She can't hear you.
Could have waved.
Well, so much for Kim being able to get in the bed early tonight.
Well, yeah, I usually go to sleep around 10, so this is just around the right time. So
sorry we took away from your TV time.
No, I was watching it the entire time.
I know, that's why I was joking.
Oh, the American football is on.
Yes.
I was paying attention. But I could see.
I wasn't cooking. I wasn't doing the dishes.
Why did we get the whole show tonight?
I mean, as much as I wanted to. Next time I will.
Oh, okay.
God, I've got the most hilarious on TV to watch. Dexter.
Oh, it's right. That comedy hour. I gotta do that too.
The Dexter.
So
the
boring.
The Dexter Deborah comedy hour.
Yay. Okay, right, my child wants me off the internet so she can go kill zombies.
Okay.
Yay.
All right.
Yay. This is a worthy cause. Good night.
Good night.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
I'm gonna sit here and talk to Illyrio while you guys leave.
Bye.
Bye. So, hello. It's just me and you now. Okay, I'm really going to leave. Thanks for recording all this, and good luck with the editing, and don't play Macho Man. Bye.
Hi, Gax and guest, I assume. It's Dez. I know I don't send you guys feedback very often because I'm not watching along. It's been a couple years since I did a watch and I'm not ready to do one now. But they all kind of run together, so it's hard to give feedback on individual episodes. However, The Body is one of those episodes that stand out. And stands out, yeah. And I remember that one clearly. And when I was watching it a few years ago, I'd watched Buffy years and years and years back, like when the last season was airing on TV or something. But I didn't remember all of it that well. But anyways, I was watching with Skylar a couple years ago, and we got to The Body, and it coincided with the trip to Steph's house. So we went to Steph's house for the weekend, and me and Skylar and Steph and Morgan watched The Body together. And, I mean, I knew what happened in the episode. I knew it was an episode where, you know, Joyce died, and it was a pretty heavy episode, but, you know, it's been a while since I've seen it, so we were sitting there and everything, and don't tell Steph, but I had tears in my eyes. My little Cylon eyes had some tears in them. Yeah, I think I hit it well. I don't think she noticed. it's the part that really got me. It wasn't the Willow crying, even though Willow's a great crier. It's the Anya. When the when Anya goes off and about how she doesn't understand, that's what got me. Because she's like a little child who doesn't understand death, and it just, it was so sad. Anyways, that's my experience with the body. And, yeah. Guess I will talk to you guys later. Hey, I'll, next time I'll send feedback in will be, oh, man. In a while. I think you know what episode that's going to be, Steph. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Salut, mon nom est Anthony et je vous appelle pour la première fois. Oops, wrong language. Hi, first time caller here. My name's Anthony, calling from the greatest bilingual metropolitan in the world, that is, Montreal. Anyways, just want to say you guys are fracking awesome. And thanks to you, my condo has never been cleaner. So this call is for episode 16, The Body. First off, I have to say this is number 2 in my top 3 Buffy episodes behind Hush and right before Once More with Feeling, which you guys have not seen yet and won't for another year. Haha. So what makes this episode so great? Well, everything except the part in the morgue, but I choose to forget that. From the cold open to Buffy's confusion, make-believe fairy tale that she makes in her head, to the Scooby's reaction to the news, especially Anya's. But what gets me every time, with a mop tin of Kleenexes all around me, is when Buffy breaks the news to Dawn. No sound, just two people mining behind the glass window, with a whole class watching. So they say 80% of all fresh water is in Canada. Well, a good portion of that comes from my eyes. So I give this episode 10 out of 10 buckets of fresh water. Can't wait to hear you guys' thoughts on this fantastic episode. So say we all au revoir.
Hello, Gags and Yes. This is Luke returning to bring you feedback for the Buffy episode entitled The Body. I'll start out by saying, yes, Joyce has died, and the whole episode is about how it affects Buffy, Dawn, and all their friends. This episode has been called not only one of the best episodes of Buffy, but one of the best episodes in TV history. And I agree, it is up there with Hush. Another unique one in that there is no music throughout it. Also, the thing about this episode is that Joyce didn't die a supernatural related death, and there was nothing Buffy could have done to stop it. All these elements made the episode more genuine, in my opinion. I know most of you think that oftentimes Joyce was a bad parent, but I like to make the argument that she was a better mom to the Scoobies than their actual mothers. And that's why her death really affects them a lot. You know, Willow's mom is very neglectful of her, and Xander's mom is busy arguing with his father. In addition, this episode has some unforgivable moments. For instance, we had the first on-screen kiss between Willow and Tara, which I thought was executed beautifully. And it felt like, oh, look, they're kissing. No, it felt like a natural moment. And then there's Anya's monologue. The show had made me cry at several points, but this moment made me cry the hardest. Emma Caulfield was unbelievable in that scene. It proved to me that not everything Anya says can be awkward, ridiculous, or out of place, and I hope it convinces you all too. Now, most people might say that the vampire at the end was very unnecessary, but honestly, I didn't think it was forced. Plus, Joss Whedon said in his commentary that the vampire was supposed to symbolize that life goes on, and I get that. Although it is kind of certain to see Dawn get attacked by a nude adult vamp. All in all, this episode was tragic, beautifully shot, and felt very real for a supernatural show. Several moments from the episode maybe relate to my own experience of losing a parent. The day before my mom died, I was told that she had 2 weeks to live. So I prayed and asked for what was best for her, and then she died the next day. The scene where Buffy tells Giles not to touch her mother's body, and is shocked at what she said, reminded me of what I experienced. I hope this experience watching the episode wasn't too painful. If so, I wish you all a speedy recovery. Until then, the rest is silence.
Hey, potential cast. This is Beth, and I've called to talk about The Body. I'm such a TV junkie, and I've watched more episodes of television than I can even fathom. So saying that this episode stands out and will forever be seared into my mind means something. It hits so many of the beats about the small moments of what it's like to lose a very close loved one in a way that I've never experienced on television before. And Joss directed this episode, and what he was able to accomplish to make the audience feel added just as much to the episode as the dialogue and the standout acting. What a journey season 5 continues to be. And anyway, you guys know that the only times I ever send in voicemails is for Theory Watch, so I'll get right to it. Illyrio called Joyce's death earlier this season in both 506 Family and 507 Fool for Love. Thanks again for the great podcast, and without further ado, here's the podcast clips.
My prediction is Dawn will run away from home.
Really? No way.
Because of overbearing Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, maybe Joyce dies and then Dawn runs away from home. You doubt Joyce would die?
I don't think Joyce
would. Calderash was killed. He'll kill off Joyce. He doesn't care. Yeah. Oh, Yana.
And here's 507, Fool for Love.
The scene where Dr. Blukas was tending to Buffy, and then Palmolov shows up.
Oh.
And then Kristen Sutherland, who named her last name after her cat, shows up, and he's trying to hide the bandages and stuff. Like, what is wrong
with Joyce? They're trying to keep it from Joyce. They don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is wrong with her that she wouldn't notice all the antiseptic lotion just sitting there? Like, there's something seriously wrong with her.
Obviously, she's going to the hospital for overnight observation.
I don't understand. Like, there's something weird there. They're just touching upon it lightly. Fearless prediction, Joyce dies this season.
Oh, no.
I don't think she will.
Joyce dies. I think she has something bad happen to her.
Hi, potential cast. This is Ina. I know you're recording for The Body tonight, so I just wanted to send in something. I don't know how much I'll be able to talk about this episode because it's so... it stirs up so much emotion, and it makes me cry really hard, and this episode is painful, but it is also very well made. It's one of the best episodes of Buffy, and it's also one of the best episodes of television, I think. But I cry like a baby, and I understand if someone doesn't can't bear to watch this episode at all, because it portrays the loss of a parent or someone close to you. It portrays it so real and so devastatingly, and. It's a tough one. The Body is a tough episode to watch and to rewatch and to talk about. And I really think they nailed the feeling that the surrealism that you can experience when you lose someone this way. Buffy and her scene with Joyce trying to revive her, and the flashback to the Christmas party, and Buffy's flash sort of Joyce coming to life and being a miracle and Then we cut back to Joyce and she's dead. And, it strikes me, it's so, the scene where Buffy, she realizes that her mom is dead when Giles comes over and she says, we're not supposed to move the body. And then it hits her that her mom is dead and it's very, yeah, it hits me in the stomach as well. And there was also some good scenes with Willow and Tara. I think they had their first kiss on screen. And Anya's speech, where she talks about, she doesn't understand death and how Joyce just isn't there anymore. And that speech always makes me cry. I also really liked the scene at Dawn's school when Buffy comes to tell her. That we don't see actually her telling Dawn, but we see it through the window and we see how Dawn reacts. And we see the drawing of a body, the negative space around the body. There's just some really beautiful imagery here. And at the end there, when they're in the hospital and Tara is talking to Buffy about losing her mother, I also like that a lot, and I hope maybe that you will like Tara a little bit better because of this scene. I don't really like the vampire at the end there in the morgue. I thought maybe this episode could do without that, but because this episode deals with something that is so real and that something that will eventually happen to all of us and something we can't escape, the death of a loved one or our parents. And the episode could maybe have been more realistic and just skip the vampire aspect altogether. it's an outstanding episode, and I really had to pull myself together after watching this to try to talk about it. And I just love the choice, for instance, not to have any music in this episode. There was no Spike. And there was some kind of comedy with Xander punching the wall, but overall it's a very serious one and one of the best episodes dealing with death, I think. And that's it. Now I'm gonna go cry again. Okay, I hope you have a good recording session. And I can't wait to hear your thoughts. Bye.